Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today's podcast is from the series Fair Trade, where I'm interviewing Gail Nicolaysen Shurtleff. Did I say that right?
You did.
Oh, great. I actually met Gail at Sunstone in 2017 here in Salt Lake City, and we accidentally sat down at the same table for the newbies, you know, where everybody who's new going to Sunstone goes to the dinner. And we got into conversation. I found out she's from the Netherlands, and I used to be the bishop in Europe for Community of Christ. So we automatically had a lot to talk about, of course. And I've just learned recently that she has become a member of Community of Christ, which is super exciting. And I am so excited for you to hear her story. So Gail, thank you so much for being here.
No problem.
Gail, tell us about yourself. We know now that you live in the Netherlands. Tell us more.
Well, from my accent, you will also know that I am from the U.S. originally. I am actually a whatever generation Californian. One of my great whatever's grandfather came over from Germany and set up a saloon in San Francisco. Sold beer to the 49ers. And that is my history of getting to California. So, wow, where to begin? We met at the newbie dinner, and even getting there was an adventure. I was born and raised LDS and was born when my father was a bishop in the LDS church. One of my first church memories is of sitting in the bishop's office, and one of the ward members gave me one of those butterscotch Brock's hard candies. And my job was just to learn how to suck and to suck on it. And my next church memory is of being in the old church office building in Salt Lake City in President McKay's office and meeting President McKay, and then flying down to Lima, Peru, where my parents served as mission president in the Andes Mission in 1962. We came back in 65. We were the first mission president family that were called and released under the new three-year policy. And we came back to the States. And then my dad was put in as a stake president, and we'd already been exposed to a lot of apostles and 70s because of being down in Peru. And so my parents had made friends with some of these men. They didn't know them all. So I grew up knowing that the phone could ring and it could be one of these guys on the end of the line. And I just thought everybody in the Mormon church had that experience. I was a kid. What did I know? I grew up with, you know, in a sense, a lot of LDS privilege that way. We were fast-tracked into a lot of things, and I just never thought about it. I should also mention that I was born blind and had surgery when I was one, got my sight, and had a phenomenal two eye surgeries, one on each eye. And part of what was phenomenal about the surgery was the fact that I had it in 1960, and the surgeon that did it had been through Harvard Medical School, knew what he was doing. This guy had paid attention of how to slice up eyes. And I have, to this day, doctors who look at my eyes and just kind of say, that was modern surgery.
Wow. So,
yeah. My father, at six, when I was 6 weeks old, 6 weeks old, blessed me in sacrament meeting. And He later told me this when I was about 16. He thought I was ready to hear it. He said, Gail, when I took you in my arms and I blessed you, I did not know what words would come out of my mouth. I did not know what God wanted me to say. And what God wanted me to say was that you would have the normal experiences of a sighted woman. And I didn't know whether that meant that you would be blind your entire life. I just knew that's what I was to say. And I held God to that blessing when I found out about it. And this is why my father waited. He knew I would hold God to that blessing. So I had this intense testimony of priesthood from a pretty young age in my life due to that experience and what resulted from it, and just seeing my parents interact and their respect for it. So let's fast forward in life to my mission for the LDS Church in 1985 and 86. And I served a very foreign mission. I served in Georgia, as in Atlanta.
Oh, not the country.
Not the country, no. The state. But when I say it was foreign, I got off the plane. The first door we knocked on was in the housing projects in Athens, Georgia. The woman opened up the door. I turned to my companion. I said, what did she say? And what they didn't tell me was I was going to have to learn a whole new dialect.
Sure.
And I did. For 18 months. And I came back and gave my report to our high council in the stake. And nobody laughed. Nobody said anything. They were all really polite to me. And then a really good friend of mine who was in the stake presidency in our stake in Fremont, California, came up to me. He had missed the report. He's a pilot. He was off flying and came up to me when he got home. He said, oh, Gail, I heard you gave a really great report about your mission. I also heard that you did it in total Southern accent. I just about went under the floor. I said, what? So I, of course, corralled my parents. Says, Mom, Dad, did I do that entire report in a Southern accent? They said, oh, you sure did. Just about died. So, you know, it was a good experience. I'm glad I served. And I think that's where I learned just how non-group think I was. When I told my father that I was going to go do this, he was stretched out on the sofa and he shot up from the sofa and he says, Gail, how are you going to deal with the group think on a mission? And I stopped and I said, you know, I'm going to blow it off. And he just kind of shook his head because he knew what I was in for. When he had been mission president, he tried not to have things like that happen. And I thought, okay, I'll just deal with it. Well, I did. I was known as a rebel. I wasn't going along with what the group was doing. I was just doing what I felt needed to be done. It did cause some problems. And my mission president said, but I love you. So that's kind of what I look at being the first part of my life. I credit the LDS Church with giving me a really good foundation for, as Richard Rohr would put it, first half of life stuff, that they just don't do second half of life very well.
So and, is that when you started thinking about leaving, or when did you start thinking about leaving?
Oh, not yet. Let's go there. At 16, well, let's talk about what happens to most young LDS women. They get bombarded with motherhood, marriage, and motherhood. every week at church. Those are basically what you get told. And at 15, I could no longer tolerate it. And my father was still state president. And due to some other circumstances that aren't important to go into here, I negotiated with my parents, I will do Sunday church only, but I will not do these activities. I just can't. They agreed, understood why I was saying that. And so I bugged out from youth activities and did attend the Sunday ones, just went to Sunday school and sacrament meeting on Sundays. But it altered my life. I did time in Rexburg, Idaho, and that's where things really started to fall apart. My parents had raised their children to be as out of LDS culture as they could possibly make it and have my father still serve in church leadership. When I got to Rexburg, Idaho, I didn't like what I saw. And I left there extremely upset, depressed, and wondering what to do. I went back to California, finished my BA at Sonoma State University with my undergraduate in psychology, and didn't attend church during that time, and didn't attend really until I was in my mid-20s, and I got involved in a singles ward and still didn't feel like I fit in. I need to mention that being disabled was part of the reason. The attitude was, well, she's low vision. She can't do that. She doesn't drive at night. She can't do that.
So being disabled, you think made a really big impact on people around you and the way that people saw you and the way you viewed the church?
Oh, yeah. Here was the big one. She's disabled. She'll make bad baby material.
Oh, my goodness.
Try that on for size.
That's painful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I struggled with it, but you know, you might be wondering, why did I serve a mission? Well, I served a mission because I felt I needed to. It wasn't because I was necessarily jumping up and down and excited about spreading a restoration message. It was more so because God was telling me I needed to go for my own purposes. And really, that's what LDS missions really are about, is for personal growth. They don't say that, and they never will, but that's what it is.
I've actually thought for a long time that missions for the LDS Church, and when anybody really, a young person goes overseas to serve in any capacity, they convert themselves to the message. That's what happened to me when I went to overseas as a young person. I converted myself.
Okay. Well, I had some amazing experiences on my mission. And I wouldn't trade them. I got converted to the New Testament because of some of the experiences I had. I mean, when I found out I was being sent into the Bible Belt, I just said, okay, I'm reading the Bible in 6 months. And I didn't make it, but I read it in about 9 months. And I thought that was really interesting. And I was reading it not for deep understanding, but the goal at that point, when I read it in my mid-20s, you know, cover to cover, I plowed through the crazy stuff. I went through Leviticus and a few other places that tend to kind of bore people. And I wanted to be able to say to Southerners, to Georgians specifically, yeah, I've read the Bible. I've seen what's in there, and the New Testament was amazing for me. I really loved it. The Old Testament, take it or leave it, loved the New Testament. So I got back off my mission and had my bachelor's and knew what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to go to graduate school and wind up with a clinical psych. Question is, did I want to get a master's or a doctorate? Well, I couldn't afford the doctorate. And to make a long story short, my father died in 1991 and left me the money to go to school and get the master's. It was a 3-year program, and it would allow me to be licensed in the state of California. And it has also allowed me to be licensed here in the Netherlands as a psychologist. So I'm very grateful for what he did. But it was during grad school that I started to be exposed to people on a regular basis who were much more diverse and had the background, came from all walks of life, LGBTQ, feminist, which I was one but didn't know it at the time. That started to open my eyes. And I went through graduate school and basically shut myself off from everything. I swore off men for the entire time, didn't go out. I just focused on what I needed to do. And I didn't know what was going on in the church. So when I finished and started my internship, I didn't know about September 6 excommunications. I didn't know any of this was going on. And I just went on with life. Well, one day in 1994, October to be exact, I opened my house door, took one look at the guy standing on my back doorstep, and thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to marry this man. And I invited him in, found out he had a girlfriend, thought, okay, yeah, whatever. Well, he finds out what I do for work. I'm getting my licensing hours. And he starts asking me how to salvage the relationship with his girlfriend. And
did you give him bad advice?
No, I didn't. I gave him really great advice. The problem was that she was clueless. And finally, after several months, 4 months, he finally broke it off. Because he realized she's not going to catch on that getting married will not solve our problems. Talking about them will, but getting married won't. And so he broke it off. And a few weeks later said, you want to go out? I thought, oh my gosh, this really could happen. And in 1998, he had served a mission in Munich, Germany. So, and he kept his German up. So he spoke really good, fluent German, great accent. He could pass for a native, and he knew Bayerisch. His boss called him into the office in August, early August of 98, and said, we need somebody for 3 months, well, until the end of the year in Germany, to supervise an office move. Somebody from headquarters here needs to go over there and do that, and we'd like to send you. So he calls me up at 10 to the hour when he knows I won't be in with a client. He says, hey, Gail, I'm going to Germany. And of course, 10 minutes, I'm like, what? And I was not happy that he told me with only 7 minutes to really talk. He took me out to dinner that night. We talked. You know, I was more upset at how he sprung it on me than anything else. Long story short, he got offered a permanent contract over in Germany. And we decided, well, we've been going out for 4 years. You know, we kind of tested being apart physically. We decided that we want to be together. And he did a very romantic phone proposal. But I won't go into that here. Just to say, I was proposed to over the telephone. And a year later, he did it in person.
Oh, that's nice.
It was. And so we moved to Europe. And we thought, you know, we didn't know how long we'd be here. Well, it'll be 20 years in 2019. A year, about 15 months after we moved here, we were transferred to the Netherlands. And it was in the Netherlands that John first went down the rabbit hole. And that's a very Mormon term for discovering all the crap that's wrong with what you've been taught your entire life that you didn't know about, and that you now do this deep dive into learning about and finding out how you're going to resolve it. For my husband, it was a crisis. And I wasn't ready to take the deep dive down the rabbit hole, but I wanted to be supportive for him. And so I listened to what he had to say. There was, you know, it took me a while. First, it was just obnoxious. And I said, you know, shut up with that. I don't want to hear it. It just, you know, fine. If there are issues, there are issues. Deal with them. And by around 2008, he's reading the book Rough Stone Rolling. And by 2010, I'm starting to say, oh, wow, there's a lot going on here, a lot. And I'm starting to listen more and more and ask questions, and I'm starting to learn. But I still haven't gone down the rabbit hole yet. Not going, not the right time. I really believe that God works in ways that are set for your time and your time only. There was only one problem with all of this, and that was the one thing that was troubling my soul. And it had happened in 1996. I was living in San Francisco Bay Area, and I was working in Concord, California. And it was after I had seen my clients and was headed home for the night. I was waiting to catch the bus so I could go to the BART station and get the BART down to Fremont. And I was standing at this bus stop, and I just looked over my shoulder, and I saw the sign on the church, and it was a notice of who was preaching on Sunday, and it was a woman. And the words went through my mind, said, you need this for your life. And I knew exactly what this was. And I said back to that voice, how can you say that? The Mormon church does not ordain women. And that's all I said. And I just said, I don't know how this is going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, but I have to shove this way down because it's going to bother me if I don't. Well, I've carried it around for over a decade, over two. And now my husband's down the rabbit hole. And in 2010, my husband had to stop work. He's bipolar, and it had gotten bad. The depression was really severe. There are several types of bipolar. He was primarily depressed. He had had one manic episode, which classified him as bipolar. And he was on medication. They were doing everything they could. Treatment was working. He was working with a great psychiatrist and different therapists at the time, trying to find one that was really a good fit for him. And he finally, in 2010, for health reasons, had to stop working. And because we had paid into the European system, we were eligible for benefits here. And I was actually launching my practice back up. I had not been able to work for several years due to visa restrictions. But when I was finally able to, I had started to launch the practice back up. And I became his basically caretaker from 2010 on. And in 2011, my vision had changed a lot, and they had a vision rehab program here that I had applied to. And in November of 2011, John became severely depressed, and I got accepted into this program. And I said, yes, it meant that I would be living away from home during the weekdays, and he'd be home alone. And this was my only concern, is how am I going to handle this? Or how are we going to handle this? What do I do? I wound up having a two-hour conversation with his psychiatrist. And during that conversation, the psychiatrist said to me, "You've got to let go. You've got to just let go of the depression. You can't control it. You know that. You know that with the work you do, you can't control it." And I thought, yeah, I hung up the phone and thought, what does that mean? Asking that question is what took me down the rabbit hole. I thought, well, I've got 5 days a week when I'll be out of the house, and I'm going to start to think about that. What does that mean for me? And at the same time, I found that on the weekends, we try to attend church. And I finally got to the point where I just looked at John. I said, "John, I'm exhausted. I can't do church. I need 2 days to just recuperate from what I'm doing." I was in a Dutch intensive program. I was also learning Braille because they wanted me to know it in case I went totally blind instead of where I am with my vision now. And so I was learning two foreign languages and learning a bunch of other things at the same time. And I got home and I would just be emotionally drained. And so we just decided not to go to church. And what I did on the weekends was I started reading and listening to podcasts. I went down the rabbit hole in a big way. And I will be ever grateful to John DeLynn and Mormon Stories for interviewing all these wonderful people with accurate information. And I just started learning. And the more I started learning, I knew why my husband, John, was raging. You know, here I'm learning all this stuff. It's like, they didn't tell us this in church. Now, I knew about Joseph Smith and polygamy. That had been openly talked about in my family because my great-grandfather was a polygamist. So that was my mother's grandfather, who she had known. And, you know, so it couldn't not be discussed. So I knew some of the issues going into this. Well, I get out of the program and I do some traveling around, went and saw my niece and my sister. My niece was living in Switzerland at the time, and my sister had come over to see her daughter. And I flew down to Switzerland for a week of fun and celebration. And then in early 2014, I wound up with a plane ticket to the US to visit with my mother. And my mother was old and we didn't know when she would die, but we knew she was going to. She was in her mid 80s at that time. So I went over to see her. And at this point, I'm just not in the same place where I have been. And it was really hard to tell my family, I'm just not there. Well, my family kind of got it. My mother totally got it. Because I would talk to my mother every Monday at 5:30 in the evening. I would Skype her. And we would talk about everything under the sun. And so she knew where I was. And we dealt with it. She was, you know, kind of sad, but okay with it. By this time, I had an ordained women profile up. And when she first heard about it, I got outed in a way that I didn't appreciate. But with my particular name, there was no way that I wasn't going to get outed. Somebody in the U.S. was going to see that profile and see Nicolason and think, which kid is she? And in this case, somebody who knew my sister made the connection that we were sisters and said, and had posted my profile on her site. And my sister, who is very, very, very conservative, basically had a conniption fit. Told my mother. My mother came unglued. The only time in my life I ever hung up the phone on my mother. And I was in tears after I had done it. And I turned to John. I said, "I don't know what's going to happen." And he just said, Gail, give it time. He was very supportive. And the next Monday, I called her. And before I could even say anything, she just starts crying and says, I am so sorry I reacted that way. And we talked. And I said, Mom, do you want to hear the profile? And she said, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And I read it to her. And she said, Gail, that's beautiful. And so she knew where I was spiritually and what I was thinking. And that was all in 2000, whenever. But in June of 2014, after we'd had dinner one night, I sat John down and I said, I need to tell you something. I said, if it's too painful. Now, this is after 3 years of thinking about this. I said, if it's too painful, and Heavenly Father said to you, it's okay. I will not stop you from going home. It took me 3 years of going through all these faith issues and growing and trying to understand what the love of God was and is, to where I could say to him, honestly, I release you. I know how bad and painful this depression is for you. And it wasn't that he wasn't getting better. It was that it would never get to where he wanted it to be. And he just tearfully thanked me. And we went on with life. And by 2015, we neither of us were ready to go back to church. And in June of 2016, he said, I want to try church again. I said, John, I don't know if I'm ready. I said, with what the church did in November 2015 with this exclusion policy, I don't know if I'll ever be ready. Denying the gospel to LGBTQ or their children because of who they choose to love. Just I had reached a point where I said, this is just wrong. This is not God. This is man. This is a vendetta. But if you really want to try it, let's search for a place and let's try it again. Well, we found a great ward. It was the ward of one of our friends. And we went down. And sure enough, that great ward lived up to what he said it was. And we actually were thinking about moving down there. And he said, you're going to handle the move. I can't do it. I just cannot. And I said, okay. You know, we'll do this. So I started looking for housing down there. And I reminded him that June in 2016 that I was still okay with what I'd said in 2014. And he just broke down and cried again and thanked me. And I was watching a miracle happen. He was actually getting better. He was able to deal with the issues that he had that had caused a lot of the depression. He came from an extremely dysfunctional family, and he was actually able to focus on them in therapy and work through it. And the medication was doing amazing things. And I had all the hope in the world that things would continue to move forward. I won't go into the details, but in August of 2016, he told me he was going for a walk that turned out not to be a walk. And when I went down to get something to eat, I had not eaten lunch. I found the note on the dining room table, and it was the hardest thing I've ever read. And my friend, who I'll call Jan, which isn't really his real name, found the rest of the notes that he tried to write. And in reading through them that weekend or the week before, he realized that it wasn't going to get better anymore. It was going to get worse. And that the episode that had begun the whole thing 30 years before was coming back. And that he had chosen to ask for permission to leave. And that traumatizes you. I said on another podcast, which I did regarding his actual death and the process of recovery, I said, I went through 2 years of hell to get to heaven. And I'm going to make a very strange statement. His death was a blessing for him and a gift to me. It released me from where I was to be able to get to where I am now. Well, in 2017, on Friday the 13th of all days, my mother died. She had a heart attack earlier that week, and she died on Friday the 13th. And I didn't go to the memorial because my family all said, we don't want you to come. It hurt a lot. They said, no, save your money. You saw her in 2014. Well, that really hurt. And so I had wanted to go to Sunstone for a few years. And I decided I'm going to go to Sunstone this year. And I'm going to see my family and some friends. And I'm just going to have fun. By then, I knew where I needed to go. I knew where I needed to start looking. And my introduction to Community of Christ, I have to tell you, was at around age 6 or 7.
Oh, my.
That's when I first learned about CFC. And what I was told was that they had split off from the LDS Church, and that one of the reasons they had split off, my parents simplified it, one of the reasons they had split off was because of the succession. And the way they explained the succession crisis to a 6 or 7 year old kid was, you know, that it was over the lineage, which, you know, is kind of yes and no. When you really dig into the history, there were a lot of reasons for the divide, including the fact that the Brighamites were more of a warrior race, shall we say. That's my terminology, not someone else's, but they were not a peaceful group of people. And my mother had served her mission in the Great Lakes, which at the time took in Kirtland, Ohio, and Michigan, and, well, the whole Great Lakes area. And so my mother had been exposed to people who were then RLDS. So, you know, I had this little tidbit of information sitting in my brain. And by 2017, I'd heard John Hamar. I'd heard Steve Veazey interviewed. I just had a lot of information, and I knew I needed to look at it and revisit it again because I had been very impressed with what I'd heard on the podcast. So my first stop was Salt Lake City, and traveling for someone who's visually impaired is a nightmare, but I did it, shedding some tears because there were a lot of firsts that I had to do alone. I was used to having somebody with me to be my eyes. And it was hard. And it, you know, it was really a challenge. But I registered for Sunstone, and I went and I did a pre-Sunstone workshop with Julie Diaz-Avedo Hanks. And so after that, her mother had done the workshop with us. And so after that, enter Carla.
Yay!
I go over to the place where we're going to have the newbie dinner. And Linda comes over and grabs me and says, Gail, you've got to meet these women. This woman knows about Europe and the Netherlands. You guys need to talk. And she said, oh, and they're from Community of Christ. I'm going, oh, cool. So I cruise over to your table, sit down. We start talking. I say, yeah, I'd really like to know something more about you guys. And I kind of go like, yeah, I just want to know. And you say, yeah, we can do that. And, you know, I don't know exactly what you said, but I thought, okay, fine, really good. So we, we all leave the newbie dinner, and we, you know, some of us go on to the Smith-Pettit lecture, and which I attended, and then finally wound up going home that night. I'm thinking, okay, this is cool. And I wind up, two things happened. I'm pretty dense, okay? And I've gotten less dense in the last 2 years. But when God wants me to do something, basically he has to slam it down in front of my face. So I walk in to Sunstone, I think it was Friday morning, and I couldn't get into the workshop that I wanted to go to. It was standing room only, out the door. And I'm not doing this. So I leave, and the woman that was helping me navigate the site, because it was at, up at the university there in Salt Lake City, so it wasn't compact. We start walking back into the main area down by where all the vendors are. And the first big conference room there, I said, "What's going on in that room?" And she said, "Oh, Community of Christ is doing a workshop on their new hymn book." And I just looked at her and says, "I'm going in there." I was a little late, of course, because the workshops had now started. I walk in late, and I had told Lindsay Hansen Park that if I was going to come all the way from the Netherlands, which half a million people from Sunstone now knew who I was and where I was from, because they kept saying, "And this is Gail Sherliff, and she's from the Netherlands," and blah, blah. So I told Lindsay, I said, if I'm going to do this, I want to be able to see it, and I want to be able to hear it. And so they had put some seating for people who were both visually impaired and hearing impaired right on the front row. And I just walked down there and I sat on that front row, which nobody else was sitting on. And we're playing hymns and people are singing. And then they put something up on the screen and I move closer and I start to hear the music and I start to see the words and they're singing. And I, to this day, cannot sing this because of the message for everyone born, a place at the table. And I looked at those words and I thought, these people mean this. There's a place here for me. And I get through all the verses. And by now I'm just boo-hooing. I can't sing it. I can barely read it through the tears. I know they asked for comments and I managed to mutter something audible. And after the workshop, I left and one of the women came out and hunted me down after. And she said, I don't even remember what she said. I know she thanked me. And I realized I'd been taken to church because that table that I was attempting to sit at didn't have a chair for me. They didn't want me. The next day, or maybe that afternoon, I don't remember now, I went to Why I Stay. And I was taken to church again by a woman by the name of Robin Linkhart, who was also Community of Christ. Well, everybody knows who Robin Linkhart is. She's an apostle with Community of Christ. I didn't know who she was before that session. And I finished Sunstone, leave Utah, but that is just sticking in my mind. I go to Oregon, I go to California, and I go home. I come home. Now it's the end of August, and I just feel like I need to write Robin. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to write an apostle in the LDS church. Those letters just get sent somewhere else. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to do this. And it got I'll call it a prompting. The prompting, but the spirit just got so strong that it was like my hands just went to that keyboard. You will write this letter. And I wrote it. I sent it. And then I got a reply. And she said, I'm going to refer you to some people over in your, neck of the woods. And you'll be in really good hands. And by this point, I'm like, she's referring me to two men. I don't want to talk to a man. I want to talk to women. I've had it with patriarchy. I've had it with men. But I stop and I think, okay, obviously God is sending me a huge message. Listen, calm down and listen. So I said, okay. So she forwarded my name on to two people I did not know, Richard James and Joey Williams. And it was Richard who actually contacted me. And I thought, is okay, I'll talk to this guy. And I shared my story with Richard. He listened, he got the issues, and I kind of going, oh, maybe this isn't so bad. And he then said, you know, I want you to talk to Joey. And I thought, okay, well, Joey has a really interesting job. He travels, he eats, and he works hard.
That's true.
Now, by this time, it is, probably mid-October. And I get a letter from Joey. He says, I'm going to be in Utrecht in November. Can you meet me at the train station there? I go, okay, fine. So we meet in November, and we wind up having lunch. And after the lunch, going over to Starbucks. And you can do all of this at the train station in Utrecht because it's a really big train station.
I remember it well. Yes, it is big.
Yeah, it's really huge. And there's an indoor shopping mall attached.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the indoor shopping mall has some really great restaurants. Well, we sit down, we go get some Chinese. We agree on Chinese. We go in, we sit down. And he starts picking my brain. He tells me some of his story and he, you know, how he got to Europe. And he starts picking my brain. And he starts asking me really intelligent questions. And I'm sitting there thinking, I am just looking. I'm just exploring. Nothing else. By this time, I've started to read the stuff that Robin Linkhart told me to. And I'm kind of online in the LDS Seekers group. But I'm not really going to join this church. I'm just kind of poking around. And Joey kind of starts asking tons and tons of questions. He's, well, what about this? He's, well, how would you get, you know, the youth involved and things? I said, Joey, I don't work with adolescents. I work with little kids and I work with adults. I don't do adolescents. It's just not something I think I'm good at. And I certainly have been educated to work with adolescents, but let's see, who of us wants to relive our adolescence? Show by the upraised hand. Any no opposed? Yay! Not going back there. I'm sorry. That just takes that kind of work takes a certain kind of duck. I'm not that duck. But at the end of this, oh gosh, whatever it was, 4 hours, something like that, I leave and I'm thinking, he treated me like an intelligent woman. And in the LDS church, that would never have happened. And at that time, he tells me about something new going on this side of the pond called Community Circle. And he says, I want you to think about joining them. And I said, okay. Well, he passes my name on to Rand, who has done a little short interview with Robin Linkhart about Community Circle. So those of you who hear this and are in Europe and who are seekers, come join us. Well, I wind up starting this. It's an online group. It's discussion-based. And in January of 2018, our meetings involved talking about the sacraments of the church. And so Rand is there, and so is Richard. Richard has been really enthusiastic about getting this off the ground. And we're talking about the sacraments, and they say, and then there's baptism. And I swear, I must have gone pale white, looked horrified, because I just knew at some time, I absolutely knew at some time, the missionary goblins were going to come out. Somebody was going to say, and we want you to get baptized. And really quick, either Rand or Richardson. No. We're only talking about the sacraments. This is not, we're not telling you or asking you in any way, shape, or form to get baptized. I'm like, whew. Well, they keep going on with the sacrament and they get to evangelical blessing. And I pipe up and I say something like, what's that? And they say, well, Mormons call them patriarchal blessing. Now, I'm not a blurter outer, but I blurted out, oh my gosh, I hate mine. Well, I didn't say hate. I actually said, I never liked mine. I think it's all wrong. And Richard says, not to directly quote him, well, in Community of Christ, you can have more than one blessing. And I'm like, really? Yeah. And I just say, we need to talk. So we wind up shortly after that connecting. And I said, Richard, I'm really interested in this. But if I do this, can it be a woman? And he says, yeah, we can do that. I said, okay. And he proceeded to give me the names of three women. And he just gave me their first names. And the name Grace really popped out at me. And I told him I wanted to connect with Grace. And Grace and I started working towards having this new blessing. Now, throughout all of this, I have had, starting in about January of that year, or maybe, well, before then, I had the strongest urge to go to Wales. And it was like, I could not suppress it. And Grace turns out to live in Wales. And we finally decide on September. I was going to go to Sunstone Europe, which was in Glasgow this past year. And I was going to be presenting at Sunstone. And I'm really working on this presentation and it's just not going well. But I keep plugging away at it. And Sunstone is September 1st. And in July, I got to the point, and I'm leaving some stuff out here. I better put that in. In March of 2018, I woke up one morning with the strong impression and just the message, you have to leave the Mormon Church. And I just started crying. This is my life. This is my heritage. I can't. What about my sealing to John? I can't leave. You have to leave the Mormon Church. I called my friend Jan and I told him, and I'm just in tears. And he said, Gail, no matter what you decide, I will support you. And so I'm typing a second letter to another apostle. And I said, Richard, I think it's time. I need to talk to you about the process for baptism, what I really need to do. I didn't hear back from him. And about 10 days before Sunstone, I finally hear from him. And he said, let's talk at Sunstone. Because by then I knew he'd be there. And so in a sense, the stage was set. I knew that I needed to tell Richard that I needed to get baptized. I didn't know when. I didn't know where. I just knew that I had to do this and I had to do it now. I need to put the plans in motion. I do Sunstone, and the only thing I was concerned about was that I knew that it would be a woman that would baptize me, and I didn't have that name, and I didn't have that name yet. And I had written Brittany Mangelson, who we all know and love. I said, do you know anybody? And she was really late getting back to me, but she said, yeah, I do. Oh, minor problem. I should also state that the workshop I was presenting on was both on women's ordination in the LDS Church and Heavenly Mother. And at the last minute, well, not really the last minute, but I thought it would be wonderful if I could have a woman that is ordained take some time and talk during this presentation. So I'd asked Brittany if she knew anybody over here in Europe or the UK that could at least record something for me to use. And she said, yeah, I know somebody, and I'd be more than glad to introduce you. And then she paused for a minute, and she said, you know, her mother's ordained too. And I just blurted out, me blurting again, I need to talk to her mother. And she said, okay, I'll hook you up. We literally Zoomed that evening, or we Skyped or whatever it was we did. That woman came on the screen and I thought, oh my gosh, this is a woman that's going to baptize me. I knew her name. Her name was Sue. I didn't know anything else. I just knew she was ordained. And I didn't know how this was going to happen. And she's, well, you know, I'm going to be at Sunstone and I'd be glad to take some time in your workshop and, you know, more than happy to do this. So the workshop, that Saturday, the workshop goes off. And by now, things are up to a fever pitch. And I'm supposed to go to Glasgow, do Sunstone, come back on Sunday, and fly back out to Cardiff on Tuesday, where I'm going to meet Grace for the new blessing. I was really not thrilled about having to make two flights, but I was able to save a huge chunk of change. So I did it. Well, at the end of the workshop, at the end of Sunstone, Richard and I sat down and I say, Richard, it's time. I need to be baptized here. And he's very calm and laid back. And I'm realizing at that moment in time that 1996 is coming back. All of this is coming to this huge head. And I'm giddy. I'm like, okay. And he says, well, you know, you're going to be in Cardiff next week. You're going to be at Grace's. And I knew by now who Grace was. Grace and James are brother and sister. He says, you know, you're going to be staying at Grace's. We can do this next week. And I say to him, okay, how, where? He said, well, we can do it at Dunfield House. I said, Dunfield House has a body of water I can be baptized in? He says, yeah, we have a pool. I'm like, you have a pool? I'm feeling totally blonde at this moment. And he says, yeah, we have a pool. Is it heated? Yeah, it is. Well, it was kind of heated. And I think, oh, okay, I guess I need to have a white dress. He said, no, you don't have to get baptized in white. I said, I don't? He said, no, you don't have to. Says, if you have something that means something to you that you want to be baptized in, you can do that. White doesn't mean anything to me. But now blue, that's a whole other podcast. Blue means something to me because blue was the first color I remember ever seeing. Because I had a memory of having no vision and then getting my vision. So blue spiritually is extremely significant to me. And I'm sitting in that chair and it clicks. I can go home and get the dress that I want to be baptized in and be baptized in it. Had that flight not worked out the way it did, I would have been packing for a 10-day trip. I got to go home and get the dress. I get to Grace's. We do the blessing on Wednesday, which was an amazing experience. God came into that room. And then on Thursday, we traveled down to Dunfield House, where Sue baptized me. And then that Sunday, well, before that, Joey and Richard and Andrew showed up at that baptism. I didn't know it. I found out that they worked late into Tuesday night so that they could come, or Wednesday night so that they could come and see me baptized. Two of the people who had been with me on this walk. And Richard says to me, you know, this is a very Community of Christ baptism. Women in the water. And I'm thinking, and one of them is disabled. And then on Sunday, I was confirmed by a man who happens to be gay and now married to his husband. And by I was confirmed by Rand and Grace. How much more diversity that you can get than that? It, to me, it meant the world. And it was the place where God had led me and has continued to lead me in the last few months. And it's only been about, what, 7 weeks now.
So not that long ago. Oh, my goodness.
No.
What a story, Gail.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I very much appreciate. I do have a question for you, though.
Gee, really?
I do. What is it about Community of Christ that is like your favorite things about it? Like, what do you really appreciate about Community of Christ?
Ooh, I appreciate the ability to explore the doctrine without fear that somebody's going to say, no, you can't go there. I appreciate the diversity. I appreciate that this is a church that when they say there is really a place at the table for everyone, they mean it. There really is a place at the table for every member in this church. I appreciate that I'm in a church that I don't have to think this man's church. This church is for all humankind, no matter who you are. I appreciate the love. I have to, an example of that is I crashed the retreat in order to get baptized. And the retreat people were perfectly fine with it. They just took me in and loved me. You know, how much more kind, loving, and generous and inclusive can you get when somebody crashes your retreat to get baptized? You know, I think the biggest appreciation is the diversity present. Obviously, I appreciate that women can be ordained. I appreciate that I can rethink my views on the Godhead, on who God is, on who the feminine divine is. I appreciate that we do mission in a unique way. I appreciate that the 70s in the church are not cramming baptism down people's throats. I appreciate that. Bottom line, I appreciate the Community of Christ exists, and I'm so thankful that they split off from the Brighamites. I appreciate most of all, I think, that peace is spoken here, that you can disagree in an adult manner and yet still all gather around the table and move forward. You don't have to hold it in. If the duck is purple with pink polka dots, you're free to say it.
Well, that is all true. Oh, gosh. Well, Gail, I'm just so appreciative for you being on this podcast. I appreciate you sharing your story and for telling us why you like Community of Christ, why you felt called to Community of Christ. And I think it's really interesting that it's been part of your story for a really long time. And now you're a part of us. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to say before we head off the podcast?
I can't think of anything. I think I just did a word dump.
No, you did a great job. It was wonderful. Well, thank you so, so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and open. And these stories are really important for people to hear. So I'm grateful that I could talk to you today.
Oh, well, I'm glad I could, Carla.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.